Hello, I'm Art Levine, host of the Straight Talk television show, now celebrating its 25th anniversary year on air. Over the past 25 years, we've recorded more than 500 shows and interviewed nearly 1,000 guests. As part of our 25th anniversary celebration, we have selected 25 of our most memorable shows to re-air as Straight Talk classics. This show is one of those classics. We trust you will enjoy seeing a part of Long Beach history, one of the many political leaders who have been our guest, or some of the nationally known actors, singers, and distinguished speakers who have visited us. So sit back, relax, and enjoy a Straight Talk Classic. The Straight Talk Classic series is brought to you through the generous support of SCAN, celebrating 40 years of keeping seniors healthy and independent. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Straight Talk. I'm Art Levine and we're delighted you could be joining us this evening. As we begin our second 13 weeks of Straight Talk, we're very, very honored to have as our guest for this evening the former governor of California, George Duke Majan. And we'll have the opportunity to discuss with him throughout the entire hour of the show his views of what's happening in both the Long Beach community, the state, and national issues, and what he sees for his political future and also the political future of the country. So please join us for tonight's edition of Straight Talk. We'll be back after these commercial messages.
Western State University College of Law, with campuses in Fullerton, Irvine, and San Diego, is the largest law school in California. In the last 25 years, we've graduated over 9,000 students. Western State has an innovative curriculum and flexible scheduling and is accredited by the Western Association of Schools and Colleges and the Committee of Bar Examiners of the State of California. Learn more by calling 714-738-1000.
You want to see the one that got away? Catch it for lunch, dinner, or Sunday brunch at the Fishtail, Long Beach's oldest seafood restaurant. The Fishtail's full menu of seafood, steaks, pasta, ribs, and much more is all served in a warm, friendly atmosphere reminiscent of days gone by. Plus, we have a pearl of an oyster bar to satisfy anyone's appetite. We also offer daily lunch and dinner specials 7 days a week. For great food and quenching drink, meet your friends at the Fishtail, the oldest seafood restaurant in Long Beach.
I'm Umberto. At Umberto Men's Store, we provide you with personalized service and wardrobe consultations.
Umberto will help you choose from the generous selection of imported high-quality suits, sport coats, and slacks. Their tailors can service you in just a day or two. Umberto carries the finest clothing for men and women, both business and casual wear. Umberto has helped people dress for success for over a quarter of a century.
I hope he'll visit us soon. That's Umberto's, 2141 Belfar Boulevard.
Welcome back, and we're coming to you this evening from our studios here in Lakewood, and we're very honored to have as our guest for the entire hour the former governor of the state of California, George Duke Majan. Governor, welcome to Straight Talk.
Thank you, Art. Nice to be here. Pleasure.
Governor Duke Majan, as many of our viewers know, has served has had a distinguished career in public service for 28 years. He served as a state assemblyman representing the Belmont Shore District here in California, and then state senator, then attorney general, and of course governor for two terms. And I understand, Governor, this is your first major public interview since leaving office last January.
That's right. That's right.
Well, we're very honored to have you with us on,
thank
on
you.
Straight Talk.
Thank you.
You've been out of office since January, almost a year. How does it feel?
It feels wonderful. I haven't been this relaxed in a long, long time. And while I really and truly appreciated the opportunity that I had to serve the people for 28 years, and especially in the governor's office, and that was indeed a great privilege, now that I've done that, I'm really enjoying getting back to a normal lifestyle once again.
Give us a sense, if you can, of what it's like to be governor, just on a personal basis. I mean, you have people that do things, cars that drive you, all that attention. I mean, it must be kind of a heady trip.
Well, it's a very demanding kind of job. People have really little idea about the demands that are put upon a governor and his time and his family and so on. We used to average, for example, 50 invitations a day that would come into the governor's office. Many of those from friends and supporters, and it's kind of hard to turn down some of those invitations. You're kind of expected to travel all over this huge, large state of ours.
Yes.
And you're constantly asked to make speeches and appearances. Legislators want you to go and do fundraising events for them. Members of your own administration, your department heads, your members of your boards and commissions, your cabinet, they want you to go and meet with different groups and so on. And of course the news media always wants to have your time.
Sure.
And they want not only press conferences, but they like one-on-one interviews.
Would not be likely if you were in office now.
Well, it would probably have been a little more difficult, but yeah. And, you know, for example, every time that I was scheduled, let's say, to make some kind of an appearance in Sacramento, because a lot of groups go there, have conventions, they meet there, they lobby their legislators and all.
They want the governor to come.
Yeah, so I'd be invited. And every time that we'd accept, and you leave your office to go to, let's say, a hotel or someplace, the minute you get out of your car, the press is standing there, and
yes.
They want a sidewalk, interview.
Sure.
And of course, they don't want to talk about what you're planning to talk about that day. They
right.
want to talk about something controversial,
controversial issue.
Yeah, and yeah. So those are sort of the things that happen.
Well, let me just state for the record that my personal feelings, even if. One differs from you politically from time to time, as I do. I personally have enormous respect for you as a person and for the fact that throughout your distinguished career there was no hint of impropriety, and that you are the kind of person that's approachable and are real. And I know how the community feels about you and Gloria on a personal basis, and I just thank you for
thank
that.
Thank you very much.
Is it frustrating that you can't get as much done, even with the powers of the governorship at your command, that you wanted to?
Oh yes, you're always frustrated. You know, there are many times when you say, "Wouldn't it be great if this was a dictatorship?" And you could just say, "Let's go ahead and do this," and it gets done. You know,
yeah.
Well, of course, that's not our form of government.
Yeah.
And in California, as well as in the federal level. We have divided government, and that's a whole subject that needs a lot of discussion and attention, because we have a governor who goes statewide, goes before the public, talks about his proposed programs and policies, gets elected, and goes to Sacramento, and then the legislature is controlled by the other party. And sometimes they kind of look upon their role as being there to stop you from doing what you told the people you were going to do.
Well, of course, and they were elected too.
They were elected too, but none of them ever went before all of the electorate statewide. They get elected in, like an assembly district is 1/80th of the state, and a Senate district's 1/40th. And so they've never taken their policies and their programs and their pledges, you know, to the electorate as a whole. So very often when you're trying to get your program through, either they block it or they want other things in exchange for getting their votes for your programs. And that's a very difficult situation. The President of the United States has the same problem.
I was going to ask you about it, because there is a parallel, of course, at the federal level with a Republican presidency that seems to go on forever and a Democratic Congress the same. Why do you think the voters set it up that way? Do you think that gives them a sense of security, that kind of a check and balance as the Constitution provided?
I don't think so. I don't think that they look upon the larger picture when they're going in to vote. I know a lot of Californians especially have traditionally said, you know, I vote for the man. I don't vote for the party. I vote for the candidate, you know, whoever it is. Well, that sounds good on the surface, but at the same time, a lot of people are very upset that things don't get accomplished, that things don't get done, and that there's constant differences between, let's say, the White House and the Congress, and therefore many major issues seem to be dragged on and on without any resolution. And I really think that the public should begin to think more in terms of, if they're going to vote for somebody for president or governor, they should look at voting for their representative who's going to support that person.
Because obviously a lot of people voted for you as governor that did not vote for the Republican legislator.
Right. And then if they don't like what the governor did and his legislature, if they don't like it and they say, well, these people didn't perform, then they've got an opportunity to throw the rascals out and put in a new group. You know, like, for example, at Great Britain, under their system, the party that's in control of the parliament is the one who selects who the prime minister is going to be.
Well, you're not proposing a change in our constitutional system.
No, I'm not proposing that change, but I do think that there really should, in other words, there's not accountability this way. One can say, well, it's the fault of the legislature, and the legislature says it's the fault of the governor.
Pointing a finger.
You know? Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of major issues that I think might more properly be addressed if the governor had sufficient support in the legislature or the president, and regardless of which party has control of the White House, let's say.
Well, I would have to say that the respect and regard of at least the United States Congress has probably never been at a greater low than it is today, between the judiciary hearings and the problems there, the kited checks, the unpaid lunch bills, and other things you could mention. There seems to be much more support for the executive, whether it's the president or the governor, than for legislators.
Well, I think that's true of the entire institution of the Congress. But when you go and ask the voters and the residents in a congressional district, what do you think of your own congressman?
They love him.
Generally speaking, they will say, well, that person's doing all right. They don't like the whole institution as a whole, but then when they go to vote, chances are they'll probably vote that incumbent back into office. That's at least what the experience has been.
Now, over 90%, as he suggests, of incumbents get reelected to the legislature each time, and yet there is such enormous dissatisfaction with, quote, the legislature. I don't get it.
Well, part of that is because of the way in which redistricting is done. Now, when they do the redistricting, as you know, the legislature draws the lines for their own districts. And when they did the last one, they did it in such a way that they created so many safe districts that once you are the incumbent in that district, it's virtually impossible to unseat the incumbent.
You're being gracious to the Democrats. Of course, was the Democratic-controlled legislature.
In that case, yes. And, of course, it's happened where the Republicans have done the gerrymandering in the past. We have tried several times to explain this to the voters with an initiative where you would actually put into the Constitution certain criteria that would have to be followed, regardless of which party was in power. But redistricting is a very difficult, complex subject to convey to the public. They don't seem to relate to it. They think that it's something that's in-house politics. it's something between Republicans and Democrats that are in Sacramento, and that it doesn't affect them. But it really does. It really, it cuts down on their choice, because nobody's going to get up and run against these entrenched incumbents when they don't really have a chance at it.
And when you're talking about job security, which is what gerrymandering is all about, you really can't expect legislators to do anything but protect their own nest. And Map versus Ohio said one man, one vote. At least we got the population equal. But like right here, the 42nd Congressional District is a classic example of gerrymandering.
Sure.
And either we need a voter initiative or maybe a Supreme Court decision saying that it's unconstitutional to have a district that looks like a lizard and crosses county lines and meanders along the coast.
But we really need to have put into law specific guidelines that must be followed every 10 years when the redistricting's done, regardless of which party is in power.
Fair enough. And we'll be continuing with our discussion with Governor Duke Majdan. And when we come back, we'll be asking the governor for his views about the future of Long Beach. So please stay with us.
This holiday season, the best camcorder you can buy is a Sony. 8mm technology made simple. This palm-sized camcorder from Sony is on sale at Ike Electronics for only $849, regular $1049, or this camcorder for a low $694. Come see why Ike Electronics sells more Sony than anyone in Long Beach.
I was going to take a job with an engineering firm in New York. I got a better offer. I'm building schools overseas with the Peace Corps. The pace is a little slower than New York, but here I'm getting grassroots experience I couldn't get anywhere else. The way I look at it, the world can wait 2 years for another 40-story smoked glass high-rise.
Peace Corps, the toughest job you'll ever love.
We're back and continuing our discussion with Governor George Duke Majdan, former governor of the state of California. And the governor, just to wind up the discussion we were having on the problems of gerrymandering, financing and money, big problem in the impact it has on the political process.
Yes, you stated a good problem, but I don't know what the answer is. I've seen over the years that I've been involved that first of all, we thought that, well, full disclosure was going to be the answer, because when I first started, you didn't really have to report everything the way you do now.
Sure.
And we moved into full disclosure, and now we've got voluminous reports that are filed and so forth. But that doesn't really seem to change the difficulties that are involved. You still have to go out and raise a tremendous amount of money to run in these campaigns. Then people say, well, what about public financing? That's always thrown up as a solution. On the other hand, I think the majority of the voters don't want to be using public funds for campaign purposes. And then if you use them in a, let's say in a general election, what about the primary? This goes back to what I was saying before. You have certain safe districts. So in a primary election, whoever wins the primary is going to win that seat.
Sure.
So let's say you've got 10 candidates running in the primary. Are you going to give public financing
so
to
what
all
is,
10 candidates?
What is the solution?
Well, I said the problem, but I don't know what the appropriate solution is, except that again, with full disclosure, people are at least able to make some kind of a judgment. If they want to make a judgment about a candidate based upon his where he raised his money, where he or she raised their money, that information is there and it's generally made public during the campaign.
Well, for example, it costs millions of dollars to run for governor.
Right.
You probably spent many millions of dollars your last races. And you need that to buy the media and do the other things that you need to get elected and reelected. How did you personally prevent the improper impact of that kind of money from changing positions that your campaign represented?
Well, you just got to try your best to try to divorce that from your mind. I mean, you just have to try to make sure that whatever it is you're doing, that you look at that particular issue, that you study it carefully, that you get all the information you can, and then use your honest best judgment in making your final decision. You just have to try to divorce all that from your decision making. It's not easy. It's not easy because a lot of people who make donations and major donations, they're expecting to have some access. They're expecting to be able at least to get their point of view before you so that you can consider it. That's okay. I mean, you can consider it, but you also better consider all the other points of view and all of the other information, and how does this particular program or this particular piece of legislation affect the state as a whole?
I know that's the normal answer to the question of what does the political leader think that the contributor buys with his money is access, and yet, as you pointed out earlier, with your incredibly busy schedule, access cannot be obtained for everybody, and
that's
even
right.
Having access is an advantage.
That's right. No question about it. That's true. And yet, in a state this size, a governor cannot possibly see everybody who, you know, wants to see him. and on the other hand, there's no question that people who are actively involved politically, they are going to have a better opportunity of getting access. They don't necessarily have to be a major contributor. They can still be, let's say, somebody who's actively involved in campaigns or whatever without being a major contributor. And still, if they are trying to get the ear of the governor or the assemblyman or the senator,
yes,
or whoever, they're going to have a better chance. Because why? Because the office holder knows this person,
sure,
whereas they don't personally know, you know, literally thousands or in some cases millions of other people out,
sure,
there.
Well, let's turn, if we can, for a moment, Governor, to the city where we live, and you've lived for many decades now, Long Beach. You've seen it change in many dramatic ways, I'm sure, since you first arrived here. And paint us the picture of what's happened and where you see Long Beach going.
Well, my wife was actually born and raised in Long Beach. I came to Long Beach in 1958, after we were married, about 1 year after we were married, and have been here ever since. And we've seen a lot of changes, just as all the residents who have been here many, many years. For an awful long time, we kept getting a lot of promises about how Long Beach was going to change and how it was going to grow and what a big role it was going to play in the international marketplace and so on.
Yeah.
And for a long time, a lot of those promises never materialized. But within the last 10 years, and especially during the time like when I was in Sacramento, every time that we would come into town and come home, which, you know, might be once every couple of months, a whole block is torn down downtown and a new building is going up, and we just saw dramatic changes, especially in the downtown area.
Yeah.
Also, of course, there's been dramatic change in terms of the cultural diversity within Long Beach since we first began living here. Now we have many major minority communities within the city. And so that's, I think, another significant change that has occurred. But I do think that Long Beach is becoming more and more of an important, very vital city within our entire state, and especially in terms of the economy of California. And most notably, of course, with the tremendous involvement of our port, and of course, for many years with the naval station, with the Navy shipyard, with Douglas and so forth, being very major employers for the state.
We did a show last week, Governor, on the issue of transportation and the role that 7th Street and Anaheim and other arterials should play within the city. And part of the dispute, I think, involves a question of just what kind of city Long Beach wants to be, and whether the tilt should be towards the downtown business interests and the development there, or whether we want to retain the neighborhoods and the charm and the very special things that have made Long Beach such a special place to so many people. I know you're not the mayor and you're not in, but any views on that whole issue?
Well, this is an issue that is, let's say, being heavily debated all around the state. Because we've had such tremendous growth in California. In the 1980s, our population grew by 25%. We were bringing in, people were coming into this state in excess of 700,000 a year net increase in population. You know, that's like taking everybody out of some states and, you know, moving them in to this state in 1 year. But people continue to come here because there's opportunity in California, along with the great weather and so on. Now, the question becomes, with this tremendous increase in population, are there going to be jobs for these people? And if there are no jobs, then, of course, they're going to become a very, very heavy burden on the rest of the population in the state. So the big debate that's been going on now for the last 8-10 years is growth versus no growth, and managed growth, and how are we going to adapt to all this? How are we going to handle it? Some people don't want any growth. And if you don't have any growth, you know, then where are these people going to get their jobs? And if they don't get jobs, they're going to be a very, very heavy burden on the rest of the population. And so there has to be a balance. There just has to be a good balance, and try to make sure that we not only are sensitive environmentally, but we also have to be economically sensitive. And so there's just got to be this balance if we're going to continue to remain a great state. We're the most populous state in the nation. We've got an economy that's equivalent to some of the major nations of the world. For example, our economy is equivalent to that of Italy. It's larger than the whole country of China. And just think about that. You know, they've got like 1 billion people in China, and our economy is larger and stronger than the entire country of China. Yes. We rank within the top 10 economies in the entire world, and it varies depending on the value of the dollar on any given day.
So the economic strength of California is a very important component of its
absolutely,
future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Long Beach, in my view, Long Beach will continue to play a major role in the years ahead, especially because of our position with our port. And I feel that we're going to see continued growth in our economy and more jobs created as a result of more activity in the international trade and the global marketplace.
And I know that's an area that you are particularly interested in. You're an attorney now with the international law firm of Sidley and Austin, and international trade is an issue of particular interest to you.
Yes, as governor, I helped to open 5 California trade and investment offices in financial capitals around the world. And the reason, again, is that we're not just a state. We're a nation state because of our size, because of our population, because of the diversity that we have in our economy, because of the diversity that we have in our communities, our ethnic communities. We have a natural link to a lot of countries in the Pacific Rim, for example. Yes. We have a natural link to Mexico. We have a natural link to Canada. And California is just ideally positioned interfacing with all of the countries on the Pacific Rim, and that's where the big growth is taking place and has been in recent years.
And when those countries think United States, they really think California.
That's right. You're exactly right.
Okay, we'll be back with more discussion with Governor George Duke Majan, but first we need to pause for these commercial messages.
This Straight Talk Classic show has been brought to you through the generous support of SCAN, celebrating 40 years of keeping seniors healthy and independent.